You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. Well, welcome to episode 58 of the Reinvest Podcast, where we get to show you how to maximize your life through the power of real estate investing. Today, we're going to jump right in. This is another in-person interview here in the Reinvest Podcast studio. And we get to be joined here today with Coley Rao with Cross Country Mortgage. Coley, loan officer, lender, a man of many talents, father.
Father.
Been in lending since 2003.
Yep.
What'd you do before that?
Flunked out of college. I was kind of flunking out of life, doing some odds and ends jobs, and fell into lending, you know. Answered an ad in the newspaper in 2003.
When did you, so how old were you then when you jumped into lending?
23.
Oh, wow. Yep. So freshly out of college.
Yes.
Flunked out of college.
Yeah, flunked out of college.
So you saw an ad in the newspaper, and who was the mortgage company or the bank at the time?
So the company, that was back in 2003. You know, it was really the world of brokers. There used to be broker shops on every corner in America, and I was in a little town, Eden, Ohio. The company was called Mortgage One. Answered the ad in the newspaper, got my JCPenney suit on, and went over and got the job, nailed it. And I started off by making $200 a week.
Wow.
So which, $800 a month.
Yeah.
2003.
That's not a lot of money.
It's not a lot of money.
Not a lot of money.
But as a 23-year-old, you felt like you're probably getting some traction.
Yeah. I mean, it was the first time that I got into something where I feel like I could, I was a professional.
Yeah.
Like it was something I could take and run with. It was something I could make my mom proud with.
So catch us up to today, and then we'll spend our time kind of filling in the middle.
Yeah. So, I mean, today, it's my 20th year in lending. I think I've written 6,000 loans.
Wow.
So in my career, specialize, you know, being in Northwest Ohio in the rural area, we do a lot of units, solve a lot of high level complex problems. We do a lot of government business. We tend to run in personally in the top 10 in USDA.
Wow.
Business every single year, nationally. So we serve, you know, the tri-state area with that product.
Wow.
Really well. That was always a niche that we carved out. And that's all been verified. But so, yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, I started learning how to build a team around personal production. And I have a team that handles that, manages that, services our clients, our referral partners, and they do a great job. They do it better than I ever did. And so that was a lesson I had to learn. We could talk about that today. And so, you know, these days I spend my time looking for other leaders around the country who want to grow their business and want the right platform to win in this ever-changing market.
And that's what I'm going to focus on today is how to build teams, right? So the art and the science of building teams. For our listeners, we have a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of real estate investors, a lot of business leaders, and that's a component that you cannot get around. If you want to have a successful and a growing business, it's going to involve people. It's going to involve teams. And it's actually, so I don't know, maybe you can, you know, agree or disagree with this. It is both harder than people think and also easier than people think in that there is a way, there's a system, a strategy to do it, but people are one of the hardest variables, right? To interact and control with, in order to build your team. So
before we jump into how you built your team, could you, you know, you've done different lending companies.
Yep.
How many lending companies?
Yep. In 20 years, which is pretty good.
You've kind of landed in 2017 on Cross Country Mortgage.
Yep. March of 2017.
And so what has been different about Cross Country that you feel has allowed you to kind of spread your wings and fly as far as building teams, recruiting leaders, and, you know, why Cross Country Mortgage? Why did you choose to land with them?
Yeah. So I think one of the things that we've been able to identify, first off, it's a company, built by an originator for originators. It's first and foremost. When I got there in 2017, our owner, Ron Lenhart, was still writing loans.
Wow.
We were a multi-billion dollar company at the time, so still relatively small, and now we'll be the number one retail lender in America 7 years later.
Wow, that is rapid growth. That's crazy.
Exponential growth, largest in the industry by far. We're definitely on the radar. So what's our secret sauce? I mean, I think that with lending, most companies have more of a hierarchy with many people stepping on the business. You know, everybody's got a title.
Right.
Everybody's stepping on your business, making money, but they're providing very little value. And with the market, certainly in a compressed market like right now, and it's a compressed market because mortgages just aren't worth anything.
You know? Right.
They're not worth anything because the market doesn't think that anybody's going to stay in the mortgages that are being written.
Right. Right.
So that is where margin compression, one of the elements where margin compression comes from. And so in that market, it exposes, right? It's like the saying, you know, when the tide goes out, you see who's really wearing swim trunks, right?
Or not.
So it's kind of that. And we're in that space. It's going to be a deep, dark winter in mortgage lending. You know, we are definitely in M&A season right now.
And what's M&A stand for?
So mergers and acquisitions.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So a lot of companies are just holding on the verge of it. And one of the things is we're just very aggressive. So when it's like chicken little, you got kids. So the sky's falling.
Right.
We're going to run right. We just run left.
Right.
We're just going to go into it. We're just going to win, you know, offense all the time.
Adapt or die kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so our makeup is really where we believe that salespeople come to be business people.
Right.
Okay, they're going to get more autonomy to run their business. For me, one of the things that's helped me is just understanding that everybody that would be listening to this or people that I talk to around the country, like, we don't own the companies that we work for. So like Andy Frazella says, listen, you're an entrepreneur. That's a good thing. Like one of my mentors said to me a long time ago, like, hey, Michael Jordan didn't own the Bulls.
Right.
So if you're going to be that, let's talk about that. And then how do we maximize being an entrepreneur? Because the company provides tons of value to us. And then it's up to us to go out and build and create. And so we don't really have any restrictions geographically, products, pricing. We go out and win all over the place. Really, whatever your dream is, you can build it.
So it kind of reminds me of, so there's been a trend of things being democratized. Right, an industry that was very tight, very niche, high barrier to entry. You know, good examples would be like the taxi industry and what Uber did to that, or Airbnb and the hotel, you know, industry. And it sounds like maybe this is a bad analogy, but they've kind of democratized mortgage lending to make you guys competitive, and to get rid of a lot of the corporate structure that was previously there for most other mortgage or banking companies that write loans.
Or what's still there around a lot of the regional banks that we probably deal with on a daily basis.
Right.
Yeah, regional banks. You know, I was reading a book the other day called Managing Oneself, and it talks about that hierarchy. You mentioned banks. It's like, okay, you know, in 25 years, maybe I'll have my boss's job.
Right.
That's not how the world works these days. The individual determines within the company what their future looks like.
Interesting.
Right. And that's the change of what we're dealing with. You know, our philosophy is we believe that the best leaders are the ones in the trenches.
Yep.
And so when you cut out people who don't understand what it takes to be you and don't provide any value, our company was built by leaders in the trenches like myself who produce, are in the trenches and just had bigger dreams to build and influence others and kind of to give back to help others learn what I have learned, because the industry is about keeping people dumb and in the dark.
Right.
That's the goal, right? Let's keep everybody dumb and in the dark. And you got to understand that it's their job to keep more. It's your job to get more.
Right.
But you have to understand how it works.
That, I mean, that's intimidating, I think, to a lot of people who have maybe been in an industry for a long time, who understand, you know, those mid-level management positions and have grown comfortable there. So then to have somebody like you with your company come in, you're stepping on toes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, what we're looking for, the people who are looking for it, you know, there's a reason that people sit in those seats and some of those hierarchies and are not willing to lay it on the line. And that's just where you got to understand yourself. We're looking for the people who are feeling trapped, want more, want to be more, want to realize more, want to leave it on the table in life.
Yep.
And really get after it. And a lot of your folks in mortgage, just like in real estate, are driven. You know, it's very hard to do that job.
Yeah. And not be.
Right. Sometimes you can, but that model is, you know, the days of getting a salary and knocking on the, you know, getting in at nine and knocking on the desk at 4:45 and getting out of there and not servicing your people and doing that 4 days a week. Those days are gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Even if you're at a bank, you know, used to have the protection of, well, I could at 4:45, I'm done. And if I can't see it for 2 weeks for a pre-approval, it doesn't really matter. Well, that. Your car, you know, your cell phone's on your business card now. You don't even have that protection.
Yeah.
Hey, you have no protection at a bank, but yet you don't, if you're self-sourced, you're not realizing the correct pay.
It does draw, that's interesting. It does draw a certain type of person. And so,
absolutely.
So, okay. So Coley, 23, flunked out of high school, took an ad out of a newspaper, made $200 a week.
Yep.
What was the next evolution then in your lending career? Because again, as you scale your business, and there's a life cycle to everything, just like your children, right? How you parent your child when they're, you know, a newborn, it differs throughout those phases. The demands on you as a leader evolve and change as well. And so walk us through some of those. What were those pivotal moments in your career where you took on more, you went to the next level, you took another step, you leaned in, found some success, and then what were the corresponding demands on you as a leader?
Yeah, so we can kind of recap this, my 20th year in the industry. So I look at things, and when I'm having conversations with people around the country, the conversation is, you know, what's your dream look like? What's it look like for you in 3 to 5 years? What's it look like for you in 10? Because if I call you in 10 years and you're doing the exact same thing and you're comfortable with that, if my question doesn't make you uncomfortable, because very few people are thinking about their life like that. But I always say, you know, if you catch me 10 years later, 1000%, I will not be doing the exact same thing I was doing 10 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I look at the first 10 years of my career, it was just put my head down, build a name for myself, do what I say, always find a way, deliver all the time. You know, it was a 24/7, 365 job.
So you were just writing loans like an animal.
Like an animal. I would say like a Tasmanian devil.
I mean, at this time, this was before you had a family.
Absolutely.
Right? And so you were, 50, 60-hour work weeks, or what did that look
90,
like?
90, 100. Absolutely. Wow. Whether I needed to or not.
How many hours are in a week again?
Never off. Yeah, I mean, when I talk about that, you know, I've had a mentor say that to me, like, hey, what's your number one job? And then you'll ask somebody that, like, okay, prospecting. You know, prospecting is my number one job. And then you ask a person, how many hours are you working a week? And they're like, oh, I'm working 65 hours a week, which I always add 10 to that.
Right.
Because real work is headspace and all that.
That's right.
So I'm working 60 hours a week. Okay. Well, how many hours did you prospect for new business? Maybe one or two.
Right.
What are you doing with all your time?
Interesting. Yeah.
That's why people don't build teams, is because of that. I'm too important. And we'll touch on that. But so for the first 10 years, it was just grind, you know, grind, put my head down, bought my first office location in 2008. So went to, you know, my second employer. I was running my files, manila folders back and forth to Fort Wayne, Indiana, an hour away.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep. Running them an hour away. A chiropractor friend of mine gave me, I mean, this was like a closet in the back of his building. I could reach out and touch both sides of the wall. No bathroom. It was just a little office with like a printer and one of the old like handheld phone, cordless phones. And so I'd go to Fort Wayne and work. I'd run those files back and forth, and I'd come back and I'd look at the caller ID, see if I missed any calls, and call those people back. And there, oftentimes it was leads. So I did that until early 2008 when I knew that I needed to get a processor, which is usually your first hire, somebody to help you deliver the loans, originate them, then you deliver them.
Yeah.
And I needed an office location. You know, it was more important back then than I believe it is now. And I remember calling our you know, vice president of retail at the time. She was less than friendly up in Michigan and intimidating moment. And I just said, listen, I need a location and I need files. Like, I'm running them over. And she said to me, well, we already have you. Why would we do that?
Whoa, no way.
Yeah.
Yikes.
That just seems counterintuitive to like building up your people.
Absolutely. That's a very greedy business.
That's a short-sighted thing to say.
So absolutely. Did you leave?
Absolutely not. I wasn't smart enough. I had no connectivity.
Right.
I didn't know anything.
You didn't have options.
No. Yeah. So what options I did have is I had already started making serious money and had no obligations.
Wow.
And so I bought my first building. So that wasn't going to work for me. So I bought my first building downtown, had my dad come in for about 10 grand. We renovated it. I put an ad in the newspaper. One of the first title people that I met, she said, I'll take that job. And away I went, had an open house, and she attended my open house.
Nice.
Wow. She was the only person in your open house?
No, but she came down.
Oh, okay. Okay.
She was kind of the key person.
Not key, just I forced my hand and then they had to acknowledge it.
Oh, right. Right. Your regional came down.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and so then, sorry on that. So she came down and attended, and then we started to work out, you know, where the company was then going to start to help me with the location.
Interesting. So you took initiative on it.
Absolutely.
She saw you were serious, and then she was going to look bad if she didn't recognize, hey, this is a guy that's hungry.
Yep.
He's getting after it.
Yeah. I think one of my number one qualities when I look for people is resourcefulness.
Yeah.
I'm ultra resourceful.
It frustrates me to no end when you hit the bureaucracy of somebody being like, well, we just can't do that. Mm-hmm. Well, how can we do it? That's the question. How can we do it? And they're like, well, we can't. And it's just yes or no. There's no creativity. There's no originality. It's just, and it shows you, it's really illustrative of a mindset.
Yep.
I'm just leaning on the system and the system says we can't do it, you know.
And it's hard.
Food industry, you had to solve problems, right? Like, so we all come from backgrounds where you got to solve problems. And so when someone doesn't do that, you just want to pull your hair out because you know there's a way.
Right. At the same time, if we get into personalities today, you have to understand that that's not in their nature, right?
Yeah.
So I can look at their disc profile and tell you that they're not going to come up with that. They're going to serve a different purpose on the team. So you need to lead in that. You got to lead around your strengths and your unique ability. And so luckily I spend a lot of time in my unique ability.
So what is your disc profile?
High D.
High D. Okay. I'm a CD.
You're a CD.
I'm a CD.
Wow.
I'm a CD. And,
are you a sales guy?
I'm more back end. He's a sales guy. What are you?
I'm I'm a freaking I.
Straight up I. Yeah.
All the way out, right in the middle. Yeah.
And so I am. I am the processor for our team.
Yes, you are. Hey. Oh, I know that.
So no, it's a
I see
ID.
Good.
We joined a group called Allen Lyman Leadership, which is local county leadership development group, and we were introduced to disc profiles and just have been going through that training. So it's been pretty interesting to see.
But it's helpful.
I spent a lot of years on training on that and Colby Index and Myers-Briggs and all those different things.
But to your point, it's not a matter of like, why can't you be a different way? It's taking ownership and saying, how do I put you in the right spot?
Absolutely.
And that goes into the team side of things, right? So you hired a processor.
Yep.
What were some of the next hires that you made?
Yeah, I don't think I made another hire for a couple years. I think that I made a hire probably in 2011. Literally, I was an absolutely awful manager, awful leader, awful at hiring. Hmm. It's not a strength of mine.
Because you were so outward focused and production focused?
Yeah. I mean, as a high D, as a hard charging individual, it doesn't typically make you a great manager.
Yeah.
Right? Because the standard you put on everybody else is so much. The pressure that you put on yourself, you put on other people. And we're very bottom line focused, not people focused. And I had to learn about that.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so, and we could talk about that too, as well. Like when I got in professional coaching, I did learn that your team, you ask a lot of people like, hey, who's your number one client? Like if I was a lender and you were asking any lender that, they would give you some realtor's name.
Huh.
But the answer to that is my team.
Right.
Mm. My team is my number one client.
Wow.
So I made a hire 2011, had a couple people on my team, not great culture. And I remember showing up to a manager meeting. I was not much of a manager and they didn't have much for management meetings, but I remember going up into outside Detroit for a manager meeting and on a Monday at noon, and they close the doors after 6.5 years. So company closed the doors.
No way. At that meeting, that's when you found out that they were going out of business?
Yep.
Whoa.
Yep. And so it wasn't like today. This is 2012. And if people that were in it, you know, it's a different market. We're in a completely different market now.
Right.
But back then it was, you couldn't get people to buy a house. You know, the government was giving people
Things were recovering.
$10,000.
Right.
Home prices were, you know, where we live, $49,900.
Yeah.
$69,900.
Great time to buy.
It was a great time to buy. Yeah. And so I wasn't connected to anybody. I knew nobody. My head was just down grinding. That was the first 10 years of my career. So in that moment, I literally didn't have a job because they were selling to a bank. And so my business with high government, all of that did not translate, even though I was one of the bigger producers from a unit standpoint. It's profitable and all that. So I kind of call that my hell week.
Wow.
You guys want to hear about it?
Wow.
Yeah.
You want to hear about it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the more painful, the better. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I know pain, you know, in the mortgage industry, I always say that, you know, it will give you a lot. It will take a lot from you. And my story is one of those.
So in 2012, though, we're through the great financial crisis a couple years. I know we're probably at the bottom, just starting to kind of maybe think about coming up economically.
Mm-hmm. 2013 is when things really
picked up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, rates were still really low. 13, things started to pop.
So it's 2009, people bled for 3 years.
Oh, absolutely.
And finally, it affected your company to the point where they had to shutter, sell off, liquidate.
Yep. Yep. And we're in that kind of same season right now. It's going to be happening this winter and through next year. So I remember coming home that night completely shook to my core, like my life was coming to an end. I didn't know what to do.
No, you just lost your job.
You don't have a job.
In essence.
Right.
Right. I had my business, but I didn't understand anything. And so it was just the story that I was telling myself. Okay. I don't know what to do. Come home that night, come in the next morning. At the time, I did only, at that moment, I did only have one employee at that moment, and come in the next morning at 9 o'clock and she resigns on me.
Whoa.
She didn't even know what happened yesterday.
She resigned unrelated to...
Unrelated.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. Slid it to me at 9 o'clock. So I spent the rest of that day going back to that vice president, that very unapproachable vice president. So we're selling a company and I need to get her... She was underpaid and overworked. Okay. Wow. And so I need to get her $5,000 more than what she's getting from a local bank who was taking her from me. So I get that done by the end of the day. Okay, from a company that's kind of going out of bit, you know.
Wow. To save her.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I get that done on Tuesday. Now on Wednesday, they were having, I call it like cattle call interviews. So you literally go up up there and they were just going to do interviews, fingerprints, like backgrounds for everybody on Wednesday. Right?
Because the new company was?
The new company.
Okay.
Yeah, which was a bank out of Chicago. So it's since been sold a couple times. It sold to Cole Taylor Bank and... that was later dissolved into MB Financial, and I think maybe Fifth Third bought it. I'm not sure. But so we go up to these cattle calls because I didn't have anywhere else to go.
Right.
Like a man without a home.
Right.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. And so
Which is ironic because you have a successful business, but you didn't understand what you could do with that.
100%.
Interesting.
Yep. Which is why I spent the second decade of my career making sure that never happened again.
Wow.
Which we can talk about. So go up and I do these things knowing that I don't really have a job and it works within their model. I'm seeing what other people are doing. I remember coming home that night and my girlfriend at the time made pecan chicken from Fresh Market. I'll never forget because I remember eating it and I remember how I felt. So nerved up, right? Sick. So that night, she's got to get up the next morning and go do something in the health field in college. She's got to drive, like the weather's not great. And I just remember being up all night. I'm sick and I'm wondering, I've just made myself absolutely nerved up to death. And so I'm not sleeping all night. It gets to the point where in the middle of the night, I'm throwing up water.
Oh gosh.
Literally crawl in the shower at like 7 o'clock in the morning. And I head up to the medical group and I told him, hey, you know, I get in there and I tell him how bad my stomach hurts. This is on Thursday now, same week. So
this is all in the same week.
It's all in the same week.
Wow.
So Thursday, get in there And I tell them that my stomach really hurts. They said, hey, listen, drink this and drive next door to the hospital. And so I drank whatever it was and went over to the hospital and waited like an hour or two. And then they came back and they said, well, your appendix is about to burst.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my word.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And so like 3 hours later,
you're in surgery.
Finally have surgery on me. And they said it was the worst one that hadn't finally burst. It like burst when it was coming out of me, like when it got out. Dude,
that's not what you want to hear from a doctor. Like, this is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. It was not great. And I was in the office the next day.
You were in the office next day?
Next day. Yep.
Just stitches, bleeding.
Absolutely.
Incredible.
Yeah. Because there was no team. There was no business. It was just a workhorse job.
It was
job.
All on your
I
shoulders.
I did not wow. understand anything different. It was right back in that office.
So I want to make some connections real quick for our listeners. So what you're doing now, very exciting stuff. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this off camera beforehand, that people see where you are today. And it's a common thing. It's a common mistake people make about other people's success.
Yes.
Wow, look at Coley. Look what he's doing.
Yeah.
But the lessons you learned and where your business is at today was birthed out of the pain.
Absolutely.
Of this season of your life.
Yes. So. Yeah. And I think pain continues in life, right? It's constant lessons and it's what you do with them. And really one of the keys to success is not just what you learn, but it's implementation.
What you do with it.
Yeah. You gotta adopt it. So, you know, so the next week, the first place to call me, so the place called me, a guy who's still a friend of mine. He called me and he said, hey, I heard what happened with you guys. And I said, I know it's terrible. And he said, we'd love to have you. And I said, where do I sign? And my story there is one of many loan officers, which I talk to all over the country, branch managers, regionals, which is you only have so much information and you make decisions based off of that information. Hmm. And you typically like 45% of loan officers move every 3.1 years. And 45% of those just call the first person they know.
Wow.
So they fall into the next opportunity because they don't know much about the business or they're not connected because it's not revealing itself unless you're really looking.
Well, you were siloed in the industry.
Most people are.
Yeah.
You know what you know. You
right.
know what somebody's teaching you.
I know how to
you.
Do loans.
Yeah. You know what yeah. somebody's teaching you. And everybody has a lens that they're talking to you through.
Interesting.
Everybody. So I signed with them. And had ended up being with them for 5 years.
Okay.
So 3 years there, 3 years in, I meet my first mentor. He's number one loan officer in the state of Michigan. Name's Kevin Polakovich. He now owns, you know, part of Neighborhood Loans and runs a monster branch and is wildly successful both in the industry wow. and outside of it.
How'd you meet him?
Speaking of a real estate investor, he's got an incredible story of all the properties he bought in Grand Rapids. He went all in.
Grand Rapids, Michigan?
Yes.
You think okay. we could get him on the show?
Yeah, if I give him a shout out here and he listens, I'm sure he would talk. All but right, he has an incredible story, property management, and owns a massive amount of properties up there.
Wow. Yeah. I would love to. Yeah. Because, you know, and we're talking about this today. Some of what's unique about your story is the siloed. You know, one of the ways people are siloed is, you know, financial guys a lot of time won't step into real estate.
Sure.
And real estate guys won't often step into, you know, because you're sold on what you know or what you think is the best way to do things.
Yep.
The longer we do this, the realization we've come to is,
yeah,
you need it all.
You need it all.
Diversification, 100%.
So, there's a lot of ways to skin a cat.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of good strategies out there. There's a lot of good businesses out there. It's not just, you know, sometimes we get in our real estate brain, it's only real estate.
Yep.
But there's other cash flowing assets. So
how'd you meet this guy?
I think that's really good to talk about today. It's kind of where I'm going with some of the networks, which is ancillary businesses to mortgage, staying in your lane, staying out of them, kind of what my goal and my dream is. So I could speak about some of that because I'm figuring it out
right
now, trying to figure it out and living it.
Yep.
And this market, I believe, is showing people how singular, I think there's good and there's bad on that. Singular focus in business can be good. Diversification can also be good as well.
Yeah.
If you structure it the right way.
Right. And you know, you don't need to know everything if you have the right relationships in place around you. I think finding those like-minded relationships, like relationships are easier in some ways because I could hop on groups and find tomorrow 500 people that want to do what I do. Mm-hmm. But how do I know that one of those is actually a good fit for my values, you know, all that stuff.
Sure.
And I know we'll talk about some of the groups that you've surrounded yourself with to find that like-mindedness, but so you found a mentor.
How did I meet him? Yeah. So it was just a year end wrap up party that they used to have in March. And I remember, him and his group, you know, was a cool group.
They were the cool guys there.
Yeah, they were the cool guys there. And I remember them, you know, giving me the signal, like I could come over, right? And and so we
it's
were
like high school over
there. They're like, yeah. Kiss my ring, you know?
Yeah. And I remember he's like, hey, you know, I see something in you. And so like, I remember him calling me. So then it's after that event, it's like right back to the grind, right? Can't see the forest through the trees, just head down, grinding in Morgan. You know the demands on it. Everybody's got a U-Haul truck in the driveway, like deadlines constantly, every day. And so I remember him calling me 2-3 times, March, April, this would have been 2015. And saying to me, hey, you know, you need to really look at this event. Come to this event in San Antonio. It changed my life. And of course, it's like, okay, yeah. Right. Hadn't really done development. Like I listened to Tony Robbins stuff. Right. And I was always kind of getting into that in my late 20s and such. But I remember the third time he called me, I remember just putting the phone down and being like, man, this guy's not going to call me again. You know? And so I just got my credit card out then and paid for the event.
Didn't look anything. He was trying to, in his way, connect with you.
Yep.
And you kept turning him down.
Yep.
And then you saw, to develop this relationship further, I should go to this conference.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just wasn't listening.
Yeah.
Just wasn't listening. And so that was a pivotal moment. So I remember showing up in San Antonio. It was a core event. And
you said it was a Tony Robbins event?
No.
What'd you
say? It was a core.
It was a core event.
Yeah,
okay.
It was called a coaching company called The Core.
Gotcha.
And I remember showing up there. And I was just blown away. I mean, it was a massive event. 600-700 people in the room, the biggest lenders, the biggest realtors in the country. And I'm this little guy from the Northwest Ohio. Yeah, right. And it was just blowing my mind.
Yeah. The world got a lot bigger.
Really big, really quick. So it was, I remember the event was terrifying. Like I was scared to be a part of it, but I was scared to not be a part of it. So at the end, they're like, listen, there's 134 guests in the room. We're going to take 17. And that was that pivotal moment. And I hadn't really met with the guy who was running the company at the time, the coaching company. And so I remember running out into the hallway of the event and I had met, one of his workers. And I had said to him, his name's Hao Dang. And I said to him, hey, I need to meet Rick, you know, because at that point I was going to go towards the fear of, I need to be a part of this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm scared. So now I'm running out there and I'm like, hey, I need to meet Rick. And he's like running me around. And then I go over here and I meet his wife. And then I turn around literally and then Rick Ruby's in my face.
Wow.
And if you know Rick, he's got, you know, he's got a presence about him. I mean, his head's as big as a lion. It's right in my face. I mean, he gives me like 15 seconds. I'm like, Rick, I need to surrender. I want to be part of this. And you know, he barked at me a couple things and then the follow up and I got straight into it. And back then it was, they have levels to it, 3 levels, and it was just straight into level 3. So I'd already had success.
Yeah.
And so I was able to get straight into level 3, which was like drinking from a faucet.
Wow. So there's a phrase that when the student's ready, the teacher appears, right? And you started listening. Mm-hmm. You listened to the guy that was throwing you these things. And you know what? I'd say this too. I've been in those situations where you have an older guy who's a mentor of sorts, you don't even realize he's trying to do that.
Right.
Because no one's going to sit down and say, I want to mentor you. I want, you know, that's not how the world works in business. That's not, these guys are looking for people who are hungry. So they throw out these little pieces of bait and they say, hey, if you'll take the next step, then I'll reciprocate.
Yes.
And you got to have eyes to see that that's what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I literally was just having that conversation this morning with loan officers that were hiring around the country, you know. Mortgage lending, like probably many businesses, is the land of broken promises. But what I've been able to identify is there's one common denominator, and it's really you, the person. Mm. Is that companies pitch, we'll do this for you, and if you buy into that, they're going to let you down. Mm. They need to give you the tools to win, every tool to win.
Right.
right? Like we're in a gunfight. A lot of people are showing up with a water pistol. We make it so you show up with a bazooka, but like literally you need to go take it and carve out your way.
Yeah.
Whether you know how to do it, you're connecting with people who know how to do it.
Yeah.
Like you just said, people believe the fact that like somebody's going to sit down with you all day, every day, 5 days a week and just give you all their time to just do it for you or completely beside you all the time. And it's just not true.
Yeah.
People, everybody's doing their own thing.
Right.
Everybody.
Right. And I was the person that I fell into that mindset. I was kind of like, you know, looking around like when's the person going to show up? Who's thinking about me? You know, and it was a very immature, kind of arrogant lens to come from. And then you got to realize the Calvary's not coming. Like you gotta,
if you want to advance to a successful person or someone that's already maybe there, you think, well, man, my time's worth a lot that I'd be willing to submit to your tutorship. And they're like, your time isn't worth anything to me.
Right.
What value do you bring to me?
Absolutely.
And I think we all kind of maybe early on get trapped in that mindset, but it's like, how do we bring value to people? How do we add to their lives? And then really just glean everything you can from these successful people that are further along than you are.
Well, and then getting to the point too, where you have this kind of pit bull mentality where you're like, my success isn't dependent upon if this guy spends time with me or not. Mm-hmm. It's not dependent on if this lead calls me back. And that actually is a more empowering place to stand in business than feeling just like you're getting thrown around by how the economy's doing. And you know, you had mentioned right now that, you know, you can't control the market, but you can control market share.
Absolutely.
And that's part of what you guys are doing now, right?
Absolutely.
So you went through that core program. What did that look like when your mindset shifted and said, I'm not just going to do loans. I'm going to build a business.
Yeah, that's a good question. I was just thinking of what you said too. If young people were listening to this, you know, society has always pushed degrees, but you'd be better off to get a mentor.
Mm, yeah.
A mentor is going to spend time with you if you listen. So it means you'd have to implement. Otherwise, you are wasting my time. But if you progress and you implement, people will spend time with you because at some point it becomes about like that fills people up. People want to give that back.
Right.
So as a young person, I would absolutely be looking for that.
Yeah, very good.
It's a key to life. So to go back there, I want to talk about the second decade. So for me, it just started my journey. So the second decade of my career was about connectivity and knowledge. So that was what I spent. You know, I spent 7.5 years in that coaching program. It changed my connectivity, connected me all around the country, was able to look under the hood at every company, know all the biggest producers, was able to be in the room listening to the biggest real estate agents, people that are building teams, realtors that are doing 50 deals a month.
Wow.
You know,
50
deals a month.
Wow.
That's a successful realtor business.
Absolutely. Yeah. Multi-million dollar earners.
Wow.
Serious business professionals with that progression. Not whether we want to jump to it, but you had asked me a question earlier about, you know, the lessons I learned. And I did learn, I must have a hard head on certain things I learned. So we talked about it. 33 years old, I was grinding. And so that would have been, so 2003, so 2000, I was at that company, the first one to call me when the company I worked at previously closed. At 33 years old, I hit a peak of success in my career of significance. At the same time, I ended up having a mini stroke in my office that same year. I still remember it like it was yesterday, having a mini TIA. And it was just because of the stories I was telling myself, how I was living my life and not running a business. I felt the weight of the world on every deal, every borrower, every transaction, every real estate agent, like having to deliver and in an unreasonable way. And my business was growing and I didn't know how to deal with it.
Wow.
You know, it had been growing to the point where, you know, we were getting up to 20 transactions. And if you know, that's a lot for somebody to handle without any sort of team or mentor or support. And I just didn't have any of that. So it took me, you know, meeting a mentor and then being in a room with that many people who are building businesses.
Interesting.
And so, yes, the core journey for me was critical. It was one of, you know, probably two or three things that then changed my life. So that's what my second decade of my career was dedicated to.
So did the core group, did they help you? Was it like a performance coaching or was it recruiting? What was the emphasis with that group?
High accountability. It's a big room, right? We always talk about that. Get in a room where you're the dumbest guy in the room. That certainly happened for me. I was in a room that was just way big for me. And it was absolutely about activity and results driven. So the philosophy was, you know, basically prospect. So know your number one job, build a team and count the money is a philosophy. So it taught you prospecting sales.
Know your number one job, prospecting.
Yep.
Build a team.
So that you can do it.
Count the money.
Count the money.
So you can measure if you're being.
Yeah. Like turning that progression from salesperson to business person, which many people never really make.
Wow.
In real estate or lending.
Correct. That's true.
You know,
well,
you don't know what's coming in and what's going out. You ask a realtor to put together P&L, you'd be talking about one out of 10,000.
Yeah. They're like, who's P&L?
Maybe 50,000.
Is that a law firm?
Right.
Well, and that's the proverbial glass ceiling that people hit is there's studies, sociologists have figured out you can only have so many connections.
Yep.
You can have 150 relationships,
yep.
not more than that, right? Because what it is, you get to a point in your business where you're like, how do I do more outside of myself? Some people never realize that the ceiling they're hitting is because it's all limited to them. Mm-hmm. So now you have to multiply yourself.
Yep. Yeah, and you got to break through. And so the core was just great with, it was all about swiping and adapting. Somebody else is doing it. Go learn from them. It was just an open book on business and how to track leads. I remember the first two things was like, they said to me, well, number one, you're going to start tracking your, I didn't track my leads. They said, you're going to track leads and you don't take applications anymore. I'm like, that's the only thing I know how to do. That's what I show up every day to do is to take applications.
Wow.
They said, when do you take applications? I said, 7 a.m, 11 o'clock at night. They said, not anymore.
Wow.
So it was immediately like blowing my mind of like creating barriers of entry into my life, all kinds of things.
You needed someone else to tell you to stop doing that though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you didn't know, because you're holding on to a security blanket. Like, no, I can't let go of that. That's what feeds my family. That's what
I miss a call. I could miss a deal.
Right.
Right. That's how I feel.
Scarcity mindset.
You're like,
you're talking
cow.
To me right now. I'm answering my phone at 9 o'clock at night.
Yep.
At 10 o'clock at night.
Yep.
Because I'm in that stage where I'm like, man, I need to answer my phone or I'm
Seth's
not.
Seth's got to be the one to answer it.
Because he's not going to answer it.
Yeah. I mean, we talked a little bit about that, where you're at on your rise in your career. You know, there's different stages that we all go through. And so you're in survival mode.
Yeah.
Right. So survival mode, not knowing your background, how much money you came from. I didn't come from a lot of money. So you immediately go into survival mode. I've spent most of my career in that.
Grinding. Yeah.
Grinding.
Two kids and a wife and, single income family.
Absolutely. So it is absolutely survival mode. The second stage is stuff. Mm. You know, when people start to make money, they buy stuff. And it fills you up for a little while. But it's not the end all be all. You know, the third stage is competition. The fourth stage is financial freedom. And then the fifth is giving it all back. And that's why you see that progression with people who have success.
Interesting.
Because the other stuff doesn't fill them up anymore. Once you're free, you've got to start giving back with your time, with your money, and making a difference and having a purpose.
Yeah.
So
cool if you can find it earlier now.
So I want to hit two things so we can keep moving, because this is all really good. And we could talk about your story for probably a couple hours.
Yep.
Your mindset started to shift. You started to change as a leader.
Yep.
From I got to do this to I got to find people and build a team that can help me do this. You started to get kind of the template on how to do that tactically. Yep. But then what were the mindset shifts that you had to have, right? So all that's changing. What were some of how do you make yourself an attractive leader to build a team?
Yeah, I mean, kind of two parts you asked me there a little bit with the mindset. So the mindset was just me understanding that I just wasn't that important. I think that people run around and they just think that they're more important. They think that they're more important to their business or to that client or to that realtor or to that lender, whoever it is that they're trying to serve. Mm. And so I just had to learn that I wasn't that important and that if somebody else can do it 80% as good as I can, they should be doing it.
Wow.
And that was the mindset shift for me. And what ends up happening is those people become more specialized because in essence, whether you really are a businessman or salesperson, you're wearing a lot of different hats. And so you end up not, the only thing you can trade is your life.
Huh. Yeah, right.
And all your time to get it done, right? You do it on grit and stamina. And, but that takes away, you know, it's a simple thing. If you're going to give over here, you're going to take away from over here.
Exactly.
And so for me, I just had to look at the fact that that wasn't going to happen forever. And what ends up happening is those people that become more specialized around you end up doing the job better than you long term.
That's a weird feeling.
It is a weird feeling.
Does it make you feel insecure as a leader?
I think at first, yeah, absolutely. Because most people that do real estate and lending are control freaks.
Right.
For a reason. They would put that at their top two or three personality traits. Right. Like it's everybody.
Micromanage.
Only
well.
I can do this.
That's what I do.
I can't delegate. So what I also learned was delegation is a learned skill.
Mm.
Like you're not just going to be a great delegator.
Yeah.
Most people build things because they're hard charging, but that also prohibits them from being great at delegating and building a team.
Right. We always joke that Garrett learned how to delegate when I joined the team.
Yeah.
And I am the result of his delegation.
It's a good match though.
Look where we are. It is a good match. Thank you, Foley. It's a good match.
Like absolutely. Like if you guys are both super hard charging, you'd butt heads in that regard. Like you're hard charging, but just different personality. You bring different things to the table. So for me, it was, I did a lot of deep work on personality profiles. You know, we don't hire anybody without doing personality profiles. I mean, think about it. It's insane. So you're going to, you know, every bad hire costs you three times your salary.
Mm. Okay. Wow, that's good.
So you're literally going to trust somebody to come in with their life and you're not even going to find out who they are.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like somebody hiring me or me not knowing enough about myself or the world or any of that. I mean, you can translate this to kids and teachers and I mean, all of that stuff where they don't even know who this person is. Like me in college, like not to defend me flunking out, but like it wasn't built for me, you know, college and some of that was built by the Rockefellers to build workers, you know, that wasn't going to fit for me. I wasn't interested in things that weren't interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
So why would you, to your point, if you have the resources, because if I sit down with somebody and I'm thinking about hiring for a certain position.
Yep.
I'm going to get there. They want the job or else they wouldn't be at the interview probably. Yep. So they're going to tell you and try and fit themselves into the template that you're saying, hey, are you good at this? But the DISC profile or whatever it is gives you the objective side that says, you think you're good for this.
Yes.
But are you good for it?
Absolutely.
And that's, that prevention actually helps you avoid broken relationships, loss of resources.
Yep. A desk job sitting by yourself most of the time, and if you're a straight eye, it's probably not a good fit.
It's really good. Yeah. You got to watch having high Ds on your team. They can be disruptive to the team. They got to be in a spot where they can kind of be individual, and be hard charging. You have your, you know, your S's and C's that are consistent and thinkers, and they're showing up for you every day. You know, 60% of the population is a high S. So
really?
That's your consistency. Yeah, it's... you know, 10% are high Ds, 15% are high I's, and 15% are high C's.
How many is high I's?
15.
15?
15% of the population.
Interesting.
60% is high C. So you get the, you're preventative in building your team. You're strategic about it because the person even sitting across from you, they may want the job, but it's like you sitting a set of tax returns in front of me. Like I could get the job done, but it's going to cause me massive pain and anxiety. And
that mini stroke is going to turn into a big stroke. Yeah.
Yeah. And you only have so much energy, you know, going into more your unique ability and strategic coach things, which is a great stuff to read for entrepreneurs, but you find out your unique ability. It's like the 80-20 rule. And then you spend your time doing that.
Yeah.
At 20%. You know, I've hired people, you know, I've had people come in and they were super high eyes, like you, but yet they're working in a corner of a factory on a sewing machine.
Mm.
And they wonder why they're in my office trying to look for a new job.
Right. Yeah.
They don't understand that.
Right.
Right. To teach them that.
Right.
This is what you're meant for, not meant for.
Yeah. That knowledge is power that way. And going back to putting yourself in a big room, you know, we made a very strategic pivot. You know, Jeff has done a very good job of building a business here in Lima. The glass ceiling that he hit and we hit was kind of like, how do we get outside of Lima?
Right.
So we went to some conferences. We went to the Best Ever Conference a couple years in a row, Dealmaker Live, some different real estate conferences. And literally in the last 2 years, we have grown more from those connections.
Yeah.
You kind of, you look at yourself and you shake your head and you're like, why didn't I do that earlier? Mm-hmm. That's stupid. You know, we always laugh. People out there who are way smarter than us are like, here's the keys to success. And we're like, oh, okay, right. Maybe for you.
Right.
And how arrogant is that to look at that and say, no, that wouldn't work for me. And
we were amazed when we started marketing ourselves on Facebook.
Who knew?
People started coming out of the woodworks. We're like, man, marketing works. We're like,
right.
Such low hanging fruit. But until you're kind of pushed out of that, or someone tells you like, hey, you need to be doing that.
Yeah.
You just, for some reason, you think you know it all, and you're actually,
that's what you said. You're not that special.
No.
And so it's like, stop trying to be, just know that someone's already done it. There's people smarter out there than you. Mm-hmm. So just listen to what people are saying.
Yeah. Find a good room, find mentors, and then hire good team members. They're sitting on the right seats.
Yeah.
GoBundance has been one of the groups that you've been a part of. Mm-hmm. And that's been one of many that you've surrounded yourself with strategically. So talk about like, what have you been able to do through groups like that? I mean, obviously it's helped you professionally and developmentally as a leader, but has there been other things outside of that that's been important?
Yeah, I think for me, so the progression was, you know, we had the massive refi boom during COVID. I built one of the biggest teams in the country. You know, we closed, you know, I think it was 259 enclosed units in the entire country last year, right?
Wow.
Doing it out of a town of 8,500 people and a team that does it. Like, I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
It does it while keeping me out of it. And they do a great job. And you know, I remember during COVID, like, loans were falling out of the sky.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember sitting in my sauna and my gym, and I'm thinking about what I want to do. You know, we were kind of running at that time on EOS.
Yeah. Okay.
Read the book Traction, mm-hmm. and a lot of people were looking at that. So you start bringing in another element of structure to your business. And what I started to say was, you know, what am I doing? Who's my audience? Because I also learned that throughout this journey is most borrowers and agents didn't really want what I was trying to give.
Like, what do you mean by that?
So when you get in high level coaching like that, it's kind of like different things we could talk about, but you start talking about it a lot. Like, they talk about, you CrossFit, you know, you talk about it all the time.
It starts seeping out of you.
You start talking constantly about being a whole individual, mind, body, spirit, you know, the importance of that.
Oh, building a team, going to the next level.
They're like,
you're hanging around people. I mean, you're just going to the moon.
But their box is this big.
Yeah. And so, and again,
that's funny.
Speaking on real estate agents, my mom was a realtor for 20 years. So like, I get that. I think it's one of the hardest jobs in America. There's a lot of pain with it.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know the challenge that it is in being an agent. I know both sides of it really, really well. Deal closed, and you're going to communicate well.
Right.
Yeah.
Take care of their client.
Exactly.
Right. They don't want all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
Because it's transactional.
Right. So for me, I started to say, well, who's my audience? What fills me up? You know, I was reading a lot of Dan Sullivan and Strategic Coach philosophies. If you haven't looked into that, some incredible stuff, like the book Who Not How and
Gap
and the Gain are incredible. And 10X is easier than 2X, businesses like that. So I just said, well, listen, what really, and I had kind of shied away from coaching. I didn't really want to coach, and I really drew a difference between coaching and mentorship. I think everybody confuses the two.
Yeah.
Everybody become a coach. I think coaching is, you know, high accountability from both sides. I think there's a lot of accountability to the coach. There's a lot of accountability to the person. What did you do? What did your daily activities? Turn it all in. Homework. Like, the core was super high accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Like, crazy high accountability. I think that I do better in my life. I want to mentor people. So I'm really, one of my unique abilities is how to get people from A to B quicker.
Mm, interesting.
And I enjoy that more than the coaching. So then it was like, well, who's my audience? Well, what fills you up? I like talking to LOs, branch managers, and regionals around the country. Well, how do I do that? How does it make sense? So you talked about a lot of ways to skin the cat in the industry or in industries. And so what I did is I was very resourceful. I was having a call with my last core coach, and he mentioned, we had a call with his number two person running his office in California. And I remember pausing the Zoom. He mentioned a guy's name. It wasn't even given to me by my coach, but he just mentioned because they were using him. Because the guy's kind of a secret. And I paused it, found his name, did the research, got connected to him, and hired him. He's the only recruiting coach in the mortgage industry.
Okay.
And so I hired him, and he's now a really, really good personal friend of mine and a really guy, you know, just an amazing human. One of the smartest guys I know. And I started building another business. I built a completely different flywheel. You know,
and this business was recruiting other lenders.
Yes.
And helping them build their business.
Yep.
For mortgage lending.
Yeah, giving them a platform to realize the difference compared to where they're at.
Huh.
To realize how to control margins if they're eligible for it, or to have more products, more ways to win, to right to be a part of the rising tide nationally of becoming the number one lender. So just ways to win security in this market. Most mortgage companies are not profitable. So I hired him and I built this business with, you know, we have virtual assistants. I have people that set appointments for me.
Wow.
And just really invested in it. But they didn't see, like, I have an amazing assistant that sets appointments for me, but I had two other ones that weren't really good. So I lost like a year.
Wow.
Of like coaching and not really having the person setting it. And it's also something not like transactions with real estate where, you know, you can make relationships, get a contract here, get a dopamine spike here,
this one, right,
this day,
right,
two right. this day, three this day.
Yeah.
It's much more long, spread slow out.
Burns, yeah.
And so it's harder to maintain that. So I built a completely different business really to do for others what I wish would have been done for me earlier in my career.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. As you look through the lack of information, the lack of mentorship, it's like, here you've got this now. What are you going to go do with it?
Yeah.
The company's not going to do it. Are you in coaching?
Yeah.
Are you in mentoring? Like, I think you've got to have multiple facets to be successful.
So
you can't just rely on mentorship. Like you said,
right.
You have a coach. How are you holding yourself accountable? What's the people that you're surrounding yourself both within the company and externally? And so for me, he was a pivotal moment in building out my business, building out a separate business. And he said something to me that changed the direction of my career too. Which we can talk about. You mentioned like GoBundance and other groups, which was, he said, Coley, I think you need to get outside of the mortgage bubble to see what's possible in the world.
Wow.
And so for the last 2.5-3 years, I've spent a lot of time from everything from, you know, Arete Syndicate, which is Andy and Ed Milet's coaching group, to Strategic Coach. I've done a couple other groups inside the mortgage space I won't mention, and just got in a lot of different big rooms that were outside of my comfort zone.
Right.
Coming in as a mortgage knucklehead, know how to do this really well, and starting to learn from other people.
Yeah.
And so for GoBundance, if you had any questions, but like that was just a group where for me, like a lot of internal coaching within the mortgage and real estate space was like, we make a lot of money, pay a lot in taxes, put it all in the stock market. And then I get in these rooms where it was like, okay, and build vertical income. And then I get in rooms where, you know, everybody's building horizontal income.
Yeah.
They all live life on their terms.
Right. Mm. Right.
Right. And none of them pay taxes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like,
I'm
the dumbest guy in the room. Yeah. Let me get some more time in this room. And there's an epidemic in the mortgage industry with that people, you know, I say it all the time that, you know, people are willing to double their income by spending 20 more hours a week to do that and build a vertical income, but yet they won't spend 20 hours a year for a tax strategy to not give half of it to Uncle Sam.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
And hopefully I'm going to help try to solve that.
What's interesting too about your progression is you put yourself in bigger spaces within the mortgage realm. It's not that you outgrew that, but in some ways you, like, I understand this now. The next way to put yourself out there was to get outside of that, around other successful people and diversify yourself.
Yep.
Through some of these places.
We kind of bring that flavor back into the industry
that you were still
that's
in.
Unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you have purpose. Now you have a niche. Now it gives you that next leg that you were looking for. He kind of hit the stroke side of things, which was your smaller pockets.
Okay.
So let's just jump right into our little nugget. So Coley, this is the portion of our show where you give us one practical takeaway or a piece of advice, which you've been doling out a lot. Okay, so maybe it's consolidating it.
Original though. All that's learned.
Well, but
somebody else smarter.
You know what though? The implementation side of things is why it's real to you though.
Right, absolutely.
And we get flooded with information all the time.
Yep.
So what would be maybe something, a guiding principle, could be something we talked about, could be something different that people can apply to their real estate investing businesses, their professional career?
Yeah, I think we talked a lot about getting a mentor. I think is one key piece in life. Find somebody, you know,
one of the things that part of my evolution too in my life was, you know, having that high accountability and that high grind. I kind of started to look at that life and it's like, don't take advice from somebody whose life you wouldn't want to live.
Right. Yep.
So like, you got to have those moments by getting in bigger groups or bigger rooms that make you lift your head up, because it's like people put their head down and that's all they can see. You've got to get to where you're picking your head up and you survey the land.
Right.
Yeah. So I spend time trying to do that or being forced into doing that by getting into those rooms. So yeah, I think for me, it's just find somebody who's doing what you want to do and try to spend time with them and emulate
them.
I mean, there's a lot of people out there who want to do that. And don't be scared of that, because the people that would truly want to give back to you, it fills them up.
Yeah.
It gives them joy. It gives them energy.
Yep. Yeah. It's that last piece of like, what's my legacy? You know, what am I leaving behind? What am I, building that's outside of myself? It's working on your business versus working in your business.
Yeah. I think everybody hits, you know, going through those layers, it's like you do want to make a difference.
Yeah.
You do want to make a difference for other people.
Yeah. It's intrinsic. I think inside of, you know, there's tons of ways that people articulate that. It's more blessed to give than receive, you know, it empowers people. But in closing today, what's been one of the greatest resources in your business career?
Greatest resources.
Could be a person, could be something very practical, could be a book that changed you, could be core, you know.
Yeah, I think it's, I would say you just mentioned a lot of things that were really good.
So go back and listen to them.
I think it's a great stew, right? Like what is the soup that you're creating? You got one ingredient in or do you got multiple ingredients?
Yeah, right.
Like, you know, are you going to events that are, you know, if you live in a small town, are you getting outside of that small town? Are you getting to a city? Are you getting somewhere where people are going to blow your mind and you're like, you see what's possible in the world?
Yep.
I think it's critical. It's been really life changing for me. I think reading some of the, you know, understanding your time, it's interesting because you grow up in school, no interest in learning anything.
Right.
I read more books than anybody now.
Isn't that funny? That's
Isn't
crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. It is crazy.
I mean, some of the books that changed my life was E-Myth.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I need to read that one because I hear everyone talk about that
That's
book.
That's a good one.
Blow you away, yeah. Who Not How, Gap in the Gain. You know, Gap in the Gain really spoke to me for the first time of why I did, you know, because in my 20s and 30s, I didn't become a dad till I was 40, and that changed my life too. But I'd already been doing a lot of deep work. But in my 20s and 30s, all I knew how to do was live, eat, sleep, breathe loans.
Right.
And for the most part, doing it very successfully, I was miserable. And I read Gap in the Gain, and I was finally able to understand why I was miserable.
Right.
And it really just deals with perspective.
Interesting.
I like the pieces is you have to, everybody's just, it's like if you're rowing out to see, you know, if you're looking at the sunset or the sun, like it's just forever.
Yeah.
You're just paddling. You're just paddling. You're just paddling and you're never getting any closer.
Right. Right.
Sometimes you got to turn around and look at the shoreline to see how far you've come.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
To gain that gratitude.
That sounds like something you'd hear in like a Karate Kid movie or something.
I did grow up in martial arts and I'm a UFC fanatic.
Yeah. There you go.
All regurgitated, but yeah.
I'm glad that we're doing this in person because you're pretty jacked.
Yeah.
You got the
home
gym.
It's a serious part. Yeah, I got a dream gym. I outfitted it right before COVID hit, so
nice.
I built it. It's like 900 square feet. Had the rubber flooring all in.
That's
it.
Sick.
I got the Arnold and the Bruce Lee up on the wall, same one that Dana White has in his office,
dude,
from the UFC. And I bought my gym in January of 20.
Okay. Wow.
Right before. And so if you guys remember with COVID,
it was
you could not get gym equipment. So I bought everything from Rogue, sauna, all of it. I cold
just
plunged
in the nick of time.
One of my passions is biohacking. So I'm way deep in this.
So are you an Andrew Huberman guy?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'm doing
10XL.
Do you do any of the stem cell treatment stuff?
Yeah. I actually just had stem cell treatments in July in Austin, Texas at the same place that Joe Rogan goes.
How many times have you done that now?
Twice.
Have you noticed anything?
Miami.
Have you noticed a difference?
10X Health now. Absolutely. Yeah. It helps with inflammation. I mean, this stage of my life, being a dad is the most important thing to me. Showing my daughter, for anybody who has a daughter out there reading the book Strong Father, Strong Daughter. You got to read that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got four girls, so I'm going to put that on my list.
Yeah. You understand how important you really are to them.
Is it essentially you're kind of building the image of what she's going to look for in a man later in life?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. And if you don't give her that, like if you, another great book is Wild at Heart.
Yeah. That is a good one.
Yeah. I've read that.
Like, you know, a girl needs two things from her dad. Number one, do you see me? And number two, do you think I'm pretty?
Yeah.
If she doesn't get that from you, she'll find it from
other people.
Yeah.
Some turd of a man. Yeah.
Yeah.
At an abnormal age.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And then you have to understand that, you know, one day you're not going to be able to protect them. So what are you going to instill in them on how they find their self-worth? Yeah,
that's good.
Wow. So I might start doing jujitsu with my daughter, actually.
Dude, I was thinking about that. That's a great way for, like, it's a practical martial art form beyond anything else. That would be self-defense.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Usable discipline.
Yep. I learned that. I started at 4 years old.
You did jujitsu at 4 years
not
old?
No, jujitsu wasn't a thing. It was all martial like taekwondo.
Arts. Yeah.
You know, gotcha.
Taught me. And so I grew up in that.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
Fascinating. All right.
Well, awesome.
Hey, in closing today, what does it look like for some of our listeners to follow your success?
Yeah. So you can find me. One of the keys, we laugh about this. Coley is pretty easy to find. You know, so Coley Rao on Facebook. I don't know what the handle is, but I don't really use Twitter. We're on Instagram.
LinkedIn?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn is really, really big for us.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of the people that we talk to, again, knowing your audience. So audience, a lot of loan officers, branch managers, investors are on LinkedIn more than they are on other platforms.
For sure.
Yep.
We'll put that stuff in the show notes, man. It's been awesome to have you in the studio. And I know this was a different episode today, but I appreciate it because we've never had somebody really talk just like through the business evolution and how your personal development was so tied to your business.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be super fruitful for a lot of our listeners today. So thank you.
Yeah. And one other thing, and I don't know if you guys want to cut this in.
Yeah.
But like you had talked about GoBundance. And so for me, one of the pieces is at 44 years old, you know, I have a different dream now. So I'm in the third decade of my mortgage career and I've identified that that's a great lane to be in. It's just not the only lane for me anymore. So like for me, I just have different thoughts of having 25 different income streams by the time I'm 50.
Right.
Yeah.
In the next 6 years. So I'm working on a lot of ancillary businesses to mortgage.
Yeah.
You know, I have, I think 25 businesses up on my whiteboard
that you're tackling.
Yeah. That we're looking at.
Do you have a title company?
Working on it. Yeah. You can have a piece. Now, a lot of those laws have opened up, you know, they even opened it up for realtor lender. Now FHA lifted that where you can actually be the lender and the realtor on the transaction.
Oh yeah. Wow.
So that's a whole other conversation that we could get into in the future of what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's big changes, you know, with the law, the class action and stuff.
Yeah,
I can tell you where that's going and why. But yeah, so I think now the goal is to have different things that I'm more in control of, having, you know, a life thesis and an investment thesis that I follow and having different channels.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
PNC, life insurance, title. Something that we're looking at, hard money, anything that's kind of somewhat related, looking at ground up construction, obviously talking about syndications and real estate.
Yeah.
Thinking about a fund to fund.
Yeah.
In the mortgage industry.
If you want to reach out to Coley, you've got an idea or something to comment on that. I'm sure he'll, you know, he and his team will take a look at that and entertain that. So thanks for coming on today.
Awesome. Thank you guys. Thanks for having me.
As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.